Hello, Crosspoint. Hope you guys are doing well today. It's great to see you. And I just want to take a moment and welcome all of our locations who may be tuning in right now. So if you're at Mount Juliet, Franklin, Dixon, over at the Bellevue campus, the West Nashville Dream Center, the ladies at Guy Behind Bars, maybe you're tuning in online right now. We just want to say thank you for being with us today. And if you are a first-time guest, I just want to say thanks for being here. It's a perfect day for you to be here as we're just going to have a family conversation. And a lot of you know, 6 months ago, our pastor, founding pastor, Pete Wilson, resigned. And you probably know more than anything what I'd really have loved to have done today was just to come out here and say, hey guys, we have our next pastor, and this is that pastor's name. But we're not there yet. And that's okay. We are learning a lot through this journey. Soon after Pete resigned, we embarked on trying to find our next pastor. And a few things that we've learned, one that I'm constantly reminded of, is that God's timetable and our timetable don't always match up. And if I'm honest with you, there's not a timetable right now that I can say, hey, in 6 weeks or whatever, we're going to have somebody. But we're trusting God in that. We have talked to a lot of well-qualified candidates, a lot of guys with a lot of experience that are in great churches around the country. One of the things that we've learned in this process, I knew and we knew that you guys make Crosspoint a very special church by what you do week in and week out. But to hear from these other pastors what they know about you and how you've impacted their churches has been such a blessing. When they say, hey, how you guys get out and love the Middle Tennessee area through Serve the City. What you guys do as a church through the Dollar Club, when you ask everyone to come together and just bring give a dollar, and you take all that and you go out and radically impact someone's life, that's been an inspiration to our church. How you guys dove in to the 12 Days of Serving, and at the Christmas store this year, how you guys provided, with through your generosity, over 900 kids to have Christmas that they wouldn't have had otherwise. And to hear those pastors say, man, you guys are impacting our churches, that has been a joy. We've watched probably over 100 messages and had several conversations with these candidates. And this morning I got up, and the Lord just kind of got me up early, I think, and brought me to a passage that came to my mind that I just want to take a moment and share with you guys. And it's back when the children of Israel didn't have a king. He was done with King Saul, and they were searching for a king, and he was using Samuel to go out and find the king. Now, I know we're not looking for a king, but we're looking for a pastor. But I think we can draw some parallels there. He sent Samuel to see Jesse. And he said, I want you to go worship with Jesse. And Jesse has a lot of sons, and I want you to make sure that he brings you those sons in front of you. And today, I'm going to tell you who the king's going to be. And so Samuel went and did that. And so when he got there, and he told Jesse, hey, I want to worship today. I want you to bring me all your sons, and let's all worship together. When that first son came up, and Samuel's like, oh, this has to be him. He's tall, he's handsome, he's strong, he looks like he's going to be a great leader. But God said, no, that's not him. Don't look at the external, don't look at his accolades. I'm looking at his heart. And one by one, Jesse brought all of his sons in front of Samuel, all seven of them. And Samuel said, do you have any more? Because God had not picked the one yet. And Jesse said, well, I have one. He's out in the field tending to sheep. He said, well, bring him in. And a lot of you probably know the rest of the story. David came in, and Samuel said, this is the one. What was encouraging to me is that the same God that Samuel served is the same God that we serve. And I'm trusting that he is going to show us who that one is. And even in the midst without a pastor, the same God that Samuel served is the same God we serve. And last week was evidence that God is still working in our church. Because Jesus moved in the lives of 97 people across all of our campuses that took that next step in their journey and were baptized. And can we just celebrate that? Can we celebrate the fact that God is still faithful through us in this journey? Now, that's kind of the process. Some of you are probably saying, okay, who's leadership? When you say leadership and people doing the conversation, who is that? So I just want to take a couple minutes and kind of unpack leadership for you guys. Crosspoint's been in existence over 14 years, and just about that whole time, there's been three teams of leadership. The elders and the board of directors, two separate teams, are made up of volunteers that love this church, love the Lord, and give their time to serve Crosspoint. The elders, they're our spiritual overseers. one of their tasks is they're just going to make sure that we're providing solid biblical teaching and we're staying true to the vision and mission of Crosspoint and what he's called us to do. The other thing they do is they empower our board of directors. Board of directors are men and women who are very skilled, who serve this church, making sure that we carry out our ministry and we stay legally okay and we stay financially within the lines and stay healthy as an organization as we carry out the ministry. The elders also empower the pastor to manage the staff and oversee the staff as they carry out the day-to-day duties of the operation here at Crosspoint. And so right after Pete resigned, the elders came to me and said, Kevin, we need you to step into the executive pastor role. We want you to take on that responsibility and lead the staff through the day-to-day operations. And I said, okay, I'll humbly accept that. But at the same time, we also put together an executive leadership team to come along beside me to help carry out the vision and lead our staff. And I just want to take a couple minutes and introduce those guys to you. And I've got some pictures of their family. And we'll begin with my family, my wife and I, Aaron, and my kids. We've been attending here for over 9 years. And the attendance of Crosspoint rose immediately when we walked in the doors with our five kids. And I worked in public accounting as a CPA, was hired by the church. And for the last 6 years, I've been the stewardship pastor and kind of helping us with all of our finances at all of our locations. So I'm a part of that team. The next member of that team is Matt Warren. Many of you guys may recognize Matt as he's a worship leader on stage at all of our campuses, plays electric guitar. But he and his wife, Ashley, have been attending Crosspoint for over 12 years and serving faithfully. Matt is our operations director, and he leads all of our operations team at the church here. Next, we have Drew Powell. Drew and Jamie have been here a little over a year, moved here from Florida last January. He is our creative arts pastor, so he oversees all of our creative teams at all of our locations. Now, Drew came to us with 16 years of ministry experience, 12 years as a creative pastor, 4 years as a lead pastor of a church in Florida. Another member of the team is Doug and Cindy Thiessen. They moved here in June. Those of you in Mount Juliet, you guys probably recognize Doug. Doug has over 40 years of ministry experience, a lot of wisdom that guy brought to the table. The most recent 18 years, he was a founding pastor of a church in Rockford, Illinois, Heartland Community Church. So when Doug and I were talking about doing these, he said, no, when you show them that picture, you got to remind them that I went into full-time ministry at the age of 6. And I'm like, that makes you younger than me. So you're a man of integrity, but I'm still trying to figure that one out. But Doug has been a great addition to the team. He's our ministries pastor, oversees local global good, our groups, our next generations of kids and students, guest experience and assimilation at all of our campuses. And then finally, we have Chris Nichols. And those of you at Bellevue, you guys recognize him as your Bellevue location pastor, because indeed, that's what he is. He's also giving oversight to all of our locations as a multi-site director during this season and leading our location pastors. Chris and Stephanie have been attending and serving Crosspoint for over 10 years. Chris has been on staff for 4. Prior to that, he served as an elder here at the church for 3 years. And so that brings us to today. And when we, as the leadership, began talking about today's message and everything that we wanted to communicate and what God was laying on our heart, we couldn't think of a better person to deliver the message to you guys today than to Chris. So Chris has got an incredible message that God has given him to give to you guys today. So let's lean in. Let's give him our attention. Let's learn what God has to say to us through him. Please welcome Chris Nichols.
Hey, Crosspoint. It is great to be with you guys again today, and very excited to be a part of this conversation, honored to speak on behalf of our leadership team here, our elders, our board, even our local pastors, to just try and have a family conversation about where we are. And part of the reality, though, is what I know is that there are some people who are brand new today who are going, what in the world are you talking about? There's some of you who are new in the last few months, some of you new in the last few years. And so before we talk about where we find ourselves, I think we first kind of have to talk about where this all began and kind of the history of Crosspoint. So let me start there. Crosspoint started in 2002. The pastor named Pete Wilson and about 50 people who had a vision for a different kind of church. Now, over the years, I've probably met 200 people who claim to be part of the original 50. And I don't think they're exaggerating. I think there was something in the early days that you didn't feel like you were attending a church. You felt like you were a part of something. And so I think those 200, they were all being sincere. Crosspoint was meeting in an elementary school, setting up and tearing down every week. And it was humble and honest origins. It was a very unique church. There was a vision that it would be more than just a building and more than just a pastor. Idea we talk about a lot, that everyone's welcome because nobody's perfect, but with Jesus, anything's possible. But there was more than that. There was a unique vision that we had for Crosspoint when we first launched. We believed that there were probably three important things that we needed to work on. The first was discipleship, the idea of growing in relationship with God. The second was community, the idea of growing in relationship with each other. And then the third was evangelism, the idea of reaching outside the walls of the church and reaching those who are far from God. And we had all been a part of different churches who seemed like they were good at maybe one of those, or maybe two of those, or they specialized in one of those. We thought there might be some incredible power in an idea of a church that found balance in all three. You don't shy away from discipleship. You don't shy away from community. You don't shy away from evangelism. You push all three at the same time. And that vision kind of informed a lot of our early decisions and really launched us as a church. And so for about 3 years, we met in the elementary school, setting up, tearing down every week. And then we got a rented space on Charlotte Pike. It was a church called Park Avenue Baptist Church. And some of you were a part of the Charlotte Pike days. That's when my story kind of started with Crosspoint. My wife and I started attending. And Park Avenue, their congregation used kind of a portion of the building, and then we rented the rest of it, and we were having services there on a weekly basis. And that was the time period when Crosspoint really started to grow. Things kind of started to move quickly. It seemed like every week there was another wave of new people who were showing up going, yeah, we just heard something about this church, and we wanted to see what it was all about. And we were adding people faster than we could add chairs or we could add service times. And so we quickly found ourselves in a situation where we had a decision to make. We were going to need more space, and we were going to need a bigger building. And we had a decision of one of two choices. We could either build a big church, a place that could kind of facilitate all the growth of what we were experiencing and even kind of facilitate the continued growth of what we might see. That was one choice. The other choice was that we could build churches. Multiple churches in the communities where our people were driving from, instead of bringing them all into one place, we could start planting churches in those communities. And we wanted to do that because we believe, and we found it to be true, that new churches reach new people. And so right now, what you might not know here in Nashville, but you guys certainly experience at the other locations, there are people that we have reached in Bellevue, in Franklin, in Mount Juliet, in Dixon, never would have walked through the doors of Crosspoint if we had stayed one church. It was when we started to plant churches in those local communities that we found a greater opportunity to reach in and connect with people. And so that was our strategy. We decided to become a multi-site church, one church that meets in multiple locations. And so we launched Dixon, and we launched Bellevue, we launched Franklin, and we launched the West Nashville Dream Center and the Teen Dream Center. Eventually, we built a Nashville campus here in the heart of downtown, and we launched Mount Juliet. And it was a pretty incredible season. And I like to think that we never took it for granted, that every person that walked through that door didn't just represent growth as a church, it represented stories that we got to be a part of. And I like to believe we never took for granted the salvations that we saw and the baptisms we got to experience. I don't think we took any of it for granted, but I would also say that I'm not sure we ever really saw it changing. Okay, let me say that a different way. I personally never imagined a Crosspoint church without Pete Wilson. Maybe some of you would say that too. So it was a big shock to us. In September of last year, when Pete stood in front of us and told us that after 14 years that he was broken and that he had been leading on empty for a long time and that it was time for him to resign. And that was a big shock to us and a big change for us. It was difficult to see my friend Pete, let alone my pastor Pete, move on because I just hadn't really pictured Crosspoint without him. And so as a result, we kind of found ourselves navigating uncharted waters. Now, here's the thing about that, this idea of uncharted waters. That is not unique to us. I think we all experience times in our lives where we navigate uncharted waters. I had some examples I prepared, but I've already had conversations with people this morning of people who are navigating uncharted waters. A woman who found out this week that there was a cancer diagnosis, and today she finds herself navigating uncharted waters. A family who has a sibling who relapsed into drug use, and right now as a family, they're reeling and they're navigating uncharted waters. And it doesn't have to be as dramatic as those things. I think in our daily life, we navigate those. In financial strain, as we try and make our dollars take care of the entire month and find ourselves a little short, we find ourselves sometimes in uncharted waters. Or in our relationships, in our marriages, sometimes things go a direction we never saw them going, and we find ourselves in uncharted waters. And so what I believe is if we're all navigating uncharted waters in our life, and if we're not right now, we probably will be soon. And if we as a church find ourselves navigating uncharted waters, then I think it's important for us to have a conversation about that. And the good news is that God has a lot to say about that. There's a story in particular in the book of Acts that I want to look at today because I think it gives us a great basis for what we're going to talk about and an incredible guide of where we're going to go from here. So it's found in Acts 27. If you've got your Bible with you this morning, you can turn there. And of course, I'll have the verses up on the screen as well. But let me set the scene for you just a little bit. The main character in the story is Paul. And Paul is one of the founders of our church, kind of the founding fathers. He was responsible for taking the message of Jesus and carrying it into the world of Gentiles, out of just the Jewish people, and planting churches. And the message spread far and wide because of the work that Paul did. But in this particular story, he is in the process of traveling back to Rome. And he's being escorted by a Roman guard. And the guard says, hey, we're going to take this boat on our way back to Rome. And Paul says, I'm not sure that this is a great idea. I've got a bad feeling about this boat. But the centurion, the guard, ignores him. And so they begin the journey. And things go south quickly. So let's take a look at what the text says. Before very long, a wind of hurricane force called the Northeaster swept down from the island. We took such a violent battering from the storm that the next day they began to throw the cargo overboard. On the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. When neither sun nor stars appeared for many days and the storm continued raging, we finally gave up all hope of being saved. So you can see they're barely into this journey. They're out in open water. They're too far from the shore to go back, and a storm hits. And it's a bad storm. It blows them out of position. So now they're not completely sure where they are. But not just that, it is a bad storm. And they quickly realize this is not going to end well. And they assume that all is lost. And there's about 270 people aboard this boat. So this is no small craft and small group. And it's not all followers of Christ. It is a lot of different types of people. But Paul hears from God. And he stands up in front of everybody on the boat and he takes the message he's heard from God and he communicates it to all those who are on board. And this is what he says. But now I urge you to keep up your courage because not one of you will be lost. Only the ship will be destroyed. Last night, an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve stood beside me and said, do not be afraid, Paul. God has graciously given you the lives of all who sail with you. So keep up your courage, men, for I have faith in God that it will happen just as he told me. Nevertheless, we must run aground on some island. Now, I'll be honest. I think there's a part of that verse that's kind of funny. That opening part of, listen, I just picture Paul in the conversation with people going, listen, I've heard from God. Good news, everybody. Everyone's going to make it. No one's going to lose their life. And everybody's like, oh, good. I feel better. He goes, the boat's not going to make it. They go, okay, well, I don't feel good anymore. Now we're on the ocean. We need the boat to do well. But he speaks honesty and faith. He talks to them about, listen, this is our reality, this is what's going on, but I have heard from God, and he is with us. And I think that gives us kind of a first clue on how we're supposed to navigate uncharted waters. It's what we put in your outline today. We confront our circumstance with honesty and with faith. I think sometimes there is a tendency in our life to choose one or the other. Like, I think sometimes we look at our circumstance just totally with honesty. We kind of confront the brutal reality of whatever it is we're facing. And that can really allow a lot of fear to creep in. That can overwhelm us and can begin to kind of push us down. There's something about only grounding yourself in honesty that may not be the most healthy thing. But on the other hand, to only anchor yourself in faith, that might sound like a good thing, but it's not good if it's like a form of spiritual denial, where you kind of just put blinders on and go, okay, God, I'm with you. I'm going to pretend none of this is happening. I don't know that that is healthy. And so what Paul does with the people on the boat is they confront their circumstance with honesty and with faith. And I think we have the opportunity to do that as a church. And so let me just do that a little for where we are right now, as far as where we find ourselves at Crosspoint today. We knew that when Pete resigned, that it was going to have an impact here at the church. And we had friends who had navigated similar things before, and they told us, listen, in his departure, you should probably expect to see your attendance drop about 15 to 20%. Now, over the last 6 months, we've seen about 21%. Now, how much you feel that kind of depends on what location you're at and what service you attend. Some places feel it more than others. We've definitely felt it here at the Nashville campus a good bit. And it's been difficult to see friends go. Like, I actually think Facebook has an algorithm designed just to screw with me, because every time someone visits another church, somehow that shows up in my newsfeed. Like, I don't even see my own sister's posts, but I know what church you visited last week. So it's Facebook messing with me. But no, let me speak to that. There are people who have left who have found themselves at a new church home, found themselves in a place where they're plugged in and connecting, and we think that is a good thing. We are not in competition with other churches. We are not fighting for market share. And so for anyone that has found themselves in a new church, in a new body, and they're connected, we celebrate that, because let me tell you, we are for the belonging. And we are for Church of the City. We are for Long Hollow Baptist. We are for Fellowship. We are for Mount Zion. We are for every church throughout Middle Tennessee where the name of Jesus is spoken. We are not in competition with those churches. We are for them. But I also know there are some people who have left who have just simply disconnected, that they're not going to another church. They've just kind of let this transition affect them in a way where they've checked out on church. And that I'm not okay with. I hate the idea of what we've experienced, turning someone away from the church and writing that off. And so I hope we'll continue to pursue those people, not just as a staff, but even the ones that you know, the people that you're connected with. Maybe this week it's sharing this message or reaching out. I don't want to see those people lost. Now, I will say, part of honesty is also not just to look at those who have left. It's to recognize that a lot of people have stayed, and we need not feel sorry for ourselves. On a weekly basis, we average at least about 5,600 people attending Crosspoint, and we're still one of the 100 largest churches in the country. And so perspective is we still have a lot of people who are engaging here and being part of this church family. But for me, that's not even the faith component of it. The faith component is the belief that if we took every church in Middle Tennessee and we totaled up every open chair in every church, my guess is we would still find ourselves short compared to the number of people in our communities who are walking daily without the hope and the promise of Jesus. And so honesty tells us that we've lost some people and we've seen some people go. But faith says we're supposed to be focused on the ones who are not yet found, that we still have the opportunity to reach out and be to the church to those people. Honesty says we've seen some friends go, but faith says God's not done with us yet. Now, we also heard during that time our friend said, listen, you also need to be prepared. Your giving is going to probably drop 15 to 20% as well. And we've seen about 19% drop in our giving. And some of that we know is people who have left. We also know that some of that is people who have stayed, who have just kind of pulled back or disconnected. And just to let you know, 19% may not really mean anything. To give you context, that represents about $400,000. And understand, that's over 5 churches, multiple dream centers, and 6 months. But I can confirm for you that we do feel that. Listen, we're not in any danger of closing our doors. I'll tell you that. Crosspoint can operate on the giving that is coming in, so we're not shutting anything down. It's dropped a lot, but it is quite stable, and so we're okay. But it would be difficult to continue being the church we've always been at these giving levels, and let me explain that. We've always, as a church, been in this incredible situation where you guys have been so obedient to God and so generous in your giving that we could function as a church and do all the things that a church does and cover all those bases. And then in addition to that, we could plant new churches and we could launch dream centers and we could do work on 5 different continents and we could partner with other organizations and financially support ones that we believe in because they're reaching people who just aren't going to step through the doors of a church. And we've been able to do a lot of things. We've been able to serve foster kids and orphans, the hopeless, the homeless, refugees, single moms, you name it. We've been able to do some pretty incredible things. And the reality is for us, if I'm just being honest, it would be difficult for us to continue to be that kind of church at our current giving levels. So I'm going to go off script just for a second. And I don't want to concern anybody in the booth. I will go back to what we were planning. That sentence, I've been looking at it for about 3 days. That sentence that at these giving levels, I don't know that we can continue to be that church. And so this is just me talking here, but we have to continue being that church. For us, Sorry if I get choked up. You guys are going to learn what everyone in Bellevue already knows, which is that I cry a lot. Listen, for us to cease doing good is to cease being Crosspoint. And for us just to do church and just to have a service and come together and for us to back off with the things that we do in the community or in these other corners of the world, just to be honest, that is not what probably brought you here, and it is not what brought me here, and it's not Crosspoint. That's just not really an option to us. I don't think we can shy away from the church that we have always been able to be and the church that I think God is calling to be. And so honesty says that right now, financially, this is one of the most difficult seasons that we've had to navigate. But faith says that God is not done with us yet and that he has more planned for Crosspoint, and we're not giving up and we're not quitting and we're not shutting anything down. We're going to continue on both with honesty and with faith. All right, so let me get back to the story because there's more to this story that I think is really cool. Let me dive into it. So they're out on the water. The storm is raging. And Paul once again speaks to everyone. And he says, just before dawn, Paul urged them all to eat. For the last 14 days, he said, you have been in constant suspense and have gone without food. You haven't eaten anything. Now I urge you to take some food. You need it to survive. So understand here, Paul is not telling people to medicate themselves. He's not going, you guys eat something, you'll feel better. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about nourishment. He is talking about strength. He understands that in the midst of this storm, they've gone 14 days now in this storm, and the people are getting tired. He says, you're going to need your strength to go where we're going. And so I believe that is true for us as well and what we're navigating. This is how we wrote it in your outline. We're going to need nourishment to make the trip. Let me explain to you what I mean by nourishment. You've probably seen it when you have someone in your life who's navigating uncharted waters. There can be this great tendency to withdraw, like to pull back from community, to pull back from friends and to isolate. Or you'll see people withdraw from church, or they'll withdraw from spiritual disciplines like prayer or reading scripture. Or sometimes it's even more practical than that. They'll pull back from exercise, from eating healthy. They'll kind of let some of those patterns go. And it's all somewhat... it's kind of backwards, because really it's in those moments, it's in those uncharted waters that we need all those things more than ever. Like, you need community more than ever when you're navigating uncharted waters. You need those spiritual disciplines like prayer and scripture. You need exercise and good food, all of these things, but there's this great tendency to pull back from them. And so we as a church believe that as we navigate these uncharted waters, it was the same thing for us. We need nourishment. And so for us, nourishment comes in doing the things that always made us uniquely Crosspoint. It was returning to those core values and the core vision that launched us as a church. It informed a lot of our decisions on the events that we did. Like, I remember in the days immediately following Pete's resignation, hearing from multiple campus pastors and multiple people on staff, you know, we got to get outside and like go serve. We need to schedule a serve the city. And so within weeks of the resignation, we planned a quick Serve the City event, and 1,000 of us went out into the community and served our neighbors with no strings attached. And for us, that was nourishment. It was this idea, all right, let's just continue to be the church we've always been. It's why we still did our Dream Big campaign, where we took on projects in other corners of the world and here in Middle Tennessee, just trying to make a difference. It's why we did the 12-day store Kevin mentioned earlier, provided Christmas. You guys did for 900 kids throughout Middle Tennessee, ones who otherwise might not have experienced Christmas. It's why on January 4th, we launched our year with an event we called One Church, where we just got together and we worshiped and we prayed and we dedicated the year to God. It's why I feel like every week since the beginning of the year, we've been talking about community groups. Because what we realize is that if we are connected to each other, that we're going to be more healthy, we're going to be more nourished, that we can't simply be connected to a pastor who might stay or who might go. We have to connect to each other. We have to connect to a vision. And so we begin to talk more about this idea of balance in the areas of discipleship, community, and evangelism. You're going to hear us talk a lot more about that in the weeks and months to come as we seek to make sure we're still connected to the original vision that launched this church in the first place, the things that made us uniquely Crosspoint. For us, all of these things is nourishment. It is reconnecting, even in the midst of uncharted waters, to the things that give us strength and give us identity. And in a couple weeks, we'll do it one more time. We'll serve the city on April 1st. We'll get out and once again serve our neighbors with no strings attached. For us as a church, those things have been nourishment. Us being the church has helped us to continue doing church. Now I'm going to dive back into the story, because this is where the story both gets really dramatic, but also where the story ends. So take a look. Here's what it says. When daylight came, they did not recognize the land, but they saw a bay with a sandy beach where they decided to run the ship aground if they could. Cutting loose the anchors, they left them in the sea and at the same time untied the ropes that held the rudders. Then they hoisted the foresail to the wind and made for the beach. But the ship struck a sandbar and ran aground. The bow stuck fast and would not move, and the stern was broken to pieces by the pounding of the surf. So here's what happens. They wake up in the morning and they see land off in the distance. The storm is still raging, and so they know this is our chance. We got to get off this boat. And so what they do is they begin throwing things off the boat. They cut the anchors and throw them down, and what they're trying to do there is make the boat really light. They want the boat to sit nice and high in the water, because what they're going to do is go full speed to the shore. And they understand that on that journey, there's going to be points where maybe the water is a little shallower, there's sandbars, or maybe there's rocks. And so they want to be going fast enough and sitting high enough in the water that the hopes that they just go right over and make it all the way to the shore. But that's not what happens. They immediately hit a sandbar and get completely stuck. And because the storm is still raging, the waves are pounding against the boat, and it actually begins to tear the boat apart. And the people begin to panic, because this is not what they expected. And they see the shore, but it's still in the distance. And they're on the boat, but it's beginning to come apart. And so it actually says in the text that one of the guards says, maybe we should kill the prisoners so they don't escape, which of course doesn't even really make sense, but they weren't thinking clearly. They were panicking. And as I read that text, I go, you know what? Why are they so surprised? Like, isn't this exactly what Paul told them was going to happen? It's right back at the beginning of the story. None of you will be lost, but this boat is toast. Like, why were they so surprised? But it's clear, as much as they might have wanted to believe that promise, they'd put a lot of hope in that boat. And it was clear they weren't going to be able to put much hope in it much longer. And so then they look off to the shore, because they also hope for the shore. But it's still at a good distance away, and so they understand they can't find any security in the shore. And so they found themselves having to rely on the promise of a God who said, I am with you, and you will not be lost. And Paul and everyone on that boat had a decision to make, to either cling to a boat that frankly was never going to get them to shore, or to dive into the open waters of God's goodness and his faithfulness. And it's actually the centurion that told him what to do next. The centurion ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and get to land. The rest were to get there on planks or on other pieces of the ship. In this way, everyone reached land safely. And so that's what happened. The centurion says, if we're going to make it, we're going to have to swim. And so that's what the people do. They dive in and they swim, and every single person makes it to shore just as God had promised them. And once they're on the island, there are people who live there who are very hospitable to him and took care of him. And Paul did incredible things in the name of Jesus while he was on that island. Eventually, they boarded another boat and they made it safely to Rome. And that's the story. And I think there are some clues in this story that are helpful to us as a church in the waters that we're navigating. And I think there's some things that might be helpful to all of you in the waters that you're navigating. So let's take a look at those. Now, I did have a friend who asked me, Chris, you sure it's a good idea to compare Crosspoint to a sinking boat? It's a fair question. I don't really see Crosspoint as the boat. As a matter of fact, I see what we're navigating as a church right now in the entire story. And so let me explain that. I think for 14 years, we found a great deal of hope and security in this boat that we've been on, this first chapter of our church, a thriving church that experienced incredible things and incredible stories. And I'm very grateful for all that we've experienced. I'm so grateful for Pete. I'm so grateful for the people who sacrificed in the early days to make this church happen, and for all of you who over the years have played the part of hero in our story and have stepped in and been the church. I'm incredibly thankful for all of that. And we knew all along that we were going to have to be more than just a building, and we were going to have to be more than just a pastor. Like, we knew that it was going to require us to be the church, that we would have to link arms and carry that vision out ourselves. We knew that from the very beginning. So maybe we should not have been so surprised when we hit the sandbar, but we were. And transition caught us off guard. And it's clear that we cannot find our hope in the church that we used to be. And I look at this next pastor and this next chapter that we're going to be experiencing, and I kind of see that like the shore. I'm excited for the shore. I'm excited for this next pastor. I can't tell you how bad our leadership team, myself, our other pastors would have loved to have been just making that announcement today. I wish we were to that step, but we're not yet. It's like the shore. It's still at a distance. And so I'm excited for this next chapter, but we're not there today. And I also consider it there would be a real danger in taking the hope that we put in our past and just to transfer that to the future instead. Like, I really can't fathom us just kind of waiting until a new pastor gets here. And then when he gets here, go, oh, thank God you're here. Here's Crosspoint. Please do something with it. I don't think we can do that. And so if we can't find our identity in our past, and if we can't find our security in our future, then what we're left with is the promise of a God who says, I am with you and you will not be lost. And just like Paul and every person on that boat, we have the opportunity to swim. Now, let me talk a little bit about what that might look like. Because it's different for all of us. We're not all in the same place here as a church or in your own waters. And I don't want to be manipulative, but I do want to be clear. And so let me just suggest a few ways. If you're someone who would say, you know what, I feel like I'm on the fence right now, or for the sake of sticking with one metaphor, I'm on the sandbar. If I'm in a kind of a self-imposed limbo where I'm not sure if I'm staying or I'm going, what I would challenge you to do today is to engage, to show up, to attend. If having guest speakers and different voices every week kind of threw you off, so at some point you disengaged from the messages and from what was being said, I would challenge you to engage and to internalize what you're hearing, to begin to try and live those things out. I think for a lot of us, that would be swimming. If you're not serving anyone in your life right now, if you're not taking just a portion of your time and investing it in someone else, I think swimming for you, I might challenge you to serve. Because something I've learned in my life is that when I serve in the midst of a difficult circumstance, there's this incredible power of stepping out of my mess and just serving someone else. There's this incredible perspective that God gives us, this kind of breath of fresh air, this nourishment that God gives us as we serve someone else, even in the midst of our pain, even in the midst of our uncertainty. There's this incredible thing that happens when we serve and when we make our life about someone else, even if just for a few moments or for a few hours. And so there'd be opportunities at any of our locations. On every single ministry team, there's opportunities to serve. Maybe at one of our dream centers, that's where you would serve. Maybe it's on April 1st, our next Serve the City. Maybe you'd sign up and be a part of that. But if you're not serving anywhere right now, I would challenge you to serve. That might be swimming for you in your life. And it's a little uncomfortable for me to say this, but I'm just going to say it for some of you. If you're not giving, swimming for you might be the challenge of giving. And not out of obligation, but just as a response to a God who is generous to us and gives us the opportunity to return back just a portion to invest in his kingdom and to make a difference in someone's life. I think for some of our people here, to swim would be to give. And I think there's a lot of other different ways that if we had a conversation over a cup of coffee, that we could figure out what it would look like for you to swim and for me to swim. But here's what I know. The opportunity to swim exists for us today. See, I think we actually find ourselves with a pretty incredible opportunity right now. An opportunity that not every church experiences. So with our founding pastor no longer here with us, and with our future pastor not here yet, we find ourselves in this middle window where we get to learn a whole lot about ourselves. We get to learn a lot about the vision that launched us and the things that we used to say so confidently about who we were as a church. And this is how we wrote it in your outline. We get to find out if the promise that God gave us is enough. We get to find out if this vision that launched us as a church 14 years ago is enough. The idea that church could be about more than just a building, more than a pastor, more than a service, more than a spiritual country club that gathers on a Sunday morning, that we could actually do something with our lives. We get to find out if that promise is enough. The idea that we can be the hands and feet of Jesus, that we don't have to wait for someone else to take a step, that we could be the ones to step into our neighborhoods, into our communities, into our schools and our workplaces, and reflect the love of Jesus in such a way that it impacts someone else. We get to find out if that promise is enough. We get to find out if this vision of finding balance in the areas of community, discipleship, and evangelism, is that really enough to anchor a church? We get to find out if all of that is enough. And it's a great opportunity, because here's the truth about uncharted waters. For Paul and for everyone on that boat, it was uncharted waters for them, but they were not uncharted for God. And for the people in this room right now, or watching online in all our locations who are navigating uncharted waters, it may feel like uncharted waters to you, but it is not uncharted to God. And for us as a church, what we've been navigating for these last 6 months and where we find ourselves going today, it may feel like uncharted waters to us, but it is not uncharted to God. See, we have this incredible opportunity to not find our identity in our past in the church that we used to be, and to not find our identity in the future of our church and what it's going to look like next. We have the opportunity to today choose to follow a God who says, I am with you and you will not be lost. We have the opportunity to dive deeply into the waters of his goodness and his faithfulness. We get to find out, God, are you enough? Crosspoint, it's time for us to swim. Let's pray. God, I'm so thankful for all that we have experienced as a church. The first 14 years in that chapter, we were here for all different parts of that, but you moved powerfully in our midst, and we saw you do incredible things, not just in our lives, but in the lives of the people around us. And it wasn't even just about growth, or wasn't just about events and things that we did. It was these stories we got to experience, the front row seat to your work in the lives of people, and we're incredibly thankful. And I'm thankful that you have more for Crosspoint. I'm thankful that there is a future. I'm thankful that there is an opportunity for us going forward. But I also know that we're not there yet, God, and I'm not going to sit and wait to see what someone else does next, God. I pray that we will embrace the opportunity to be the church today, to understand that we have a clear vision that informs how we should move and what we should do, and we can take those steps today, to understand that you speak to us and through us today, to understand that there is healing that can happen in our lives today, that there is healing in our relationships and our marriages that could happen today, that there are children in our community who are in unbelievably difficult circumstances, who you love deeply, and they did nothing to choose where they find themselves, but there is the opportunity to be your church to them today. There's incredible opportunity to reach out to those who are marginalized and those who are broken, those who are forgotten, and to be your church to them today. God, you are looking for a church to respond and to step forward and to swim today. And God, I pray that we will live up to that challenge. I pray that we will be your church today. Because God, I trust you. I trust that you did not bring us this far to leave us. I trust that your heart for us is great and that your promise to be near us and that we will not be lost, I believe that is true. God, I trust you in this moment. I pray that each of us will find our way to respond to this message today. I pray that you will speak peace into our broken places and into our uncharted waters. I pray that we will step forward, God, and that we will swim. It's in your name that I pray. Amen.